Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
In today's episode of the Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli podcast, we are calling the hogs with a big woo pig suey as we welcome the University of Arkansas women's basketball head coach Mike Neighbors to the podcast. Debbie talks to Coach Neighbors about his unique offensive coaching mindset, which he attributes to needing to be different and do things a certain way to compete in the Pac-12 when he was the head coach at the University of Washington and now as the leader of the Razorbacks. Coach Neighbors talks about how he got his start in coaching as a high school girls coach who taught chemistry and biology and also went 1-24 in his first year. He also talks about meeting Coach Blair during a round of golf, and that meeting led to him eventually joining Blair's Arkansas staff as a director of operations. And from there, he became assistant coach under Susie Gardner with the Razorbacks. Then he was an assistant to Kevin McGuff at Xavier University before becoming the head coach at Washington. And he says every move he made was done so with the hope of one day becoming the head coach of Arkansas in mind. He talks surrounding himself or yourself with greatness, and he credits Coach Blair, Coach Gardner, and Coach McGuff, along with a couple others, with helping him during his coaching journey. Debbie and Coach talk a little more about his system, one that is fun to play in and players and recruits are drawn to. He talks the importance of having an identity, and their system is built around an identity that players want to be a part of. The episode ends with a great discussion of education and growth, understanding that in the game of basketball, we are not playing chess because there are no identical pieces. Coach Neighbors also gets into the importance of expanding your knowledge by reading, listening to podcasts, and gaining what he calls rhythm to life. All of this and much more is in an awesome episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli. Here's Debbie and Coach Neighbors.
Mike Neighbors, man, you know what a big fan I am of the way you play. I love watching your team. Why don't more teams take on the offensive mindset that you know I have been preaching about for decades, and I just happen to love what you do?
I don't know, but here's my suspicion. I got in this game a unique way, so I kind of had a no risk, let's go all out, do it your way availability. I think a lot of people have to do it a certain way because of the way they got in. I was kind of an outlier, so let's do it this way and believe in what you do and what's the risk. I go back to coaching high school basketball. Okay, that's fine with me too. But I wanted to do it our way. I thought we had to be different. I knew there was, you know, my first job was at Washington, and you look across the room and there's Tara Vandiver with 1,000 wins, and I'm not going to out-coach her. And there's, you know, Scott Rook, and there's Charlie Turner Thorne, and there's Corey Close, and there's all these people that I know I can't even begin to have experience with. So we got to do something a little different, and I think that's why we did it and stuck with it. And just I love the types of kids it brings us, and I love practice every day the way we play.
You hit on a couple of buzzwords for me, so I'm going to start number one with unique. Okay. Unique way and how you got into the game. I listened to you on a podcast this summer with Brendan Sir, who's a good friend of both of ours, with coaching you. And I learned a lot about you, Mike, about your background, how you got in it. Share with everyone how you got in it and the steps that you took to be able to put yourself in this position.
Well, I was going to be a vet, and that was going to be my life calling, and I couldn't put down big animals. I thought you were supposed to save them all, you know. So that was an eye-opening experience for me. And next thing you know, the fastest way to a job was to teach high school chemistry and biology and coach high school basketball. So that kind of found me. We go 1-24 that first year as a head coach, and you really start to doubt whether you should have not been a vet or not. But fell in love with the girls, fell in love with coaching in general, and started coaching high school basketball. And found out that I loved coaching. I didn't love teaching so much. I always felt like I was depriving those kids that were going to go on and be doctors and people that needed chemistry and biology. I didn't want one of them growing up and working on me. So I got out of – I wanted to be in college. I got to know Coach Blair on the golf course and begged him to hire me in some capacity. He never had really any job opening that worked out. And then I had a heart attack, you know, that last year as a high school coach. I had a sudden heart attack out of the clear blue, a genetic defect that, you know, made me decide, do whatever you got to do to get in. So that summer, Coach Blair had a director of ops job. This was back in the day when it was just kind of getting started. And I spent 2 years begging him for the job, and then he offered it to me, and I accepted, and he spent the next 2 hours trying to talk me out of it, telling me why I didn't really want to take a $58,000 pay cut. But I think he knew pretty quick it wasn't about the money for me ever. And with the heart attack and a young family, I just didn't feel right telling my daughter growing up, chase your dreams, and me not being the one doing it. So jumped in with Coach Blair, and you know, he provided me every opportunity to grow. Then every step along the way, I made sure that I was working with good people. You know, started with Kathy Miller, and then back with Susie Gardner, and then Kevin McGuff. Surround yourself with, be close to greatness, and move to be willing to sacrifice and pick up a broom and be Gary Blair's Diet Coke guy. Eventually to be Kevin McGuff's, you know, right hand. And then fall, you know, a job fall in your lap when the job opened for Kevin at Ohio State, and we had good things going at Washington. So that's the mini series version. We could expand that out, but that's kind of the mini series version of that. And you know, the last thing was every move I ever made was so that I could be the head coach at Arkansas someday. That was my ultimate driving standard, and everything I did and every decision I made was based around that.
The other word that you mentioned was outlier. I love that. I mean, I'm a fan of Malcolm Gladwell. I read The Outliers. I love that book. I think my job is about how and why things happen inside the game. But you're an outlier with your system. You know, you're very open about what you run. Everybody knows what you're doing. It's not a secret. But it's not about the plays. It's about the player. And you have created a system where it's fun to play in, and it's not like you're not playing defense. I mean, you are playing defense. It might not be up the line or on the line or full court pressure. It might be a little bit of a softer cover, but it works. It works for you. At least you're in every game. You've played in more close games this year than I think anyone has.
I was just looking. You know, the reveal came out last night. We played 9 games against the reveal. You know, we've played 9 games, and 3 of those have gone to the buzzer, and 3 other ones have been one possession games. So, yeah, you know, I think there's a couple of misnomers about it. People think we just fly it up the floor and shoot the first good shot we take, and it's all about threes. And, you know, we've been outshot from the 3-point line like half our games this year. Mm-hmm. You know, people that really get around us know that we like threes, but we love layups and free throws. We love those. We like threes, but we love the other ones. But you got back to it, you know, when you said it is all about the players. And, you know, it's why we try to do things there. We don't number players 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We don't call them point guard, 2 guard. We use, you know, Rackers, Rabbits, Dragons, and Locks. And the reason we do that is because I want every recruit or every future player to go, what do you mean I'm a dragon? Because when I get that furrowed brow and that palms up moment, you know, we talk about palms up moments all the time. What do you mean? I got them. Because then I get to explain to them, this is what you do. Let me show you some video of Kelsey Plum. Let me show you some video of Chantel Osahar. Let me show you some video of Chelsea Dungy. Amber, you know, and then they get to see what they can do. And then we morph it into what we do. You know, I don't think there's really a, you know, we call it functionally fast because I hate turnovers, just despise, absolutely just drive me crazy. But, you know, there's not any, you couldn't really call it dribble drive. I don't think you could call it the system, although I've talked to Paul Westhead every summer since I got into this game, and I love talking to him. But I hope it is unique. I hope it's unique to us, you know, and that's to me what our players enjoy. They like to have an identity. And when you give them that, then it's really easy to coach to that.
So I think I've shared with you my offensive incentive plan in the past. I want to just break it out right here because I want to get your take on it.
Yep.
So my offensive incentive plan is encouraging athletic directors to incentivize their coaches, because all coaches like to have an incentive.
Yep.
And the incentive is not an academic or an attendance-related incentive. I think academically you're supposed to be doing that. That's your job. You shouldn't get an incentive if your team finishes with all of a 3.0 GPA. That's crazy. Kids should be in college because they're trying to get their degree anyway.
Yep.
And the attendance thing is a byproduct of winning. And winning is a byproduct of the product and the style of play and what is entertaining to the fan. So here's what I propose to athletic directors. And I will admit there are a few ADs. I'm not going to say who they are right now because I don't want to disclose for those coaches. But there are some athletic directors that have incorporated this into coaches' contracts. If you shoot 46% against light competition, like inside your conference, same resources, light competition, and or less than 12 turnovers a game, I think that's a formula for winning. And I think that is a winning formula on the court. It's going to create a winning formula off the court. And if you incentivize your coaches for that, in theory, it's my belief that they will go into practice, spend 75 to 80% of their time in practice trying to make their players better. Trying to make their players better, not trying to spend a bunch of time on under-over heads trap ice jam switch. The seven different ways are a variation of defending ball screen action. So what's your take on that, Mike, when I say that to you? Because I believe you're a believer like me, but there's not enough of us.
I am, but it's almost one of those things I hope stays the secret just a little for about 5 more years so I can retire. Because I think you've nailed it. I mean, take all that away. Just have a contract that says, you know, win. You know, and do the best for your student athletes. You know, be a good role model and do the best you can to win whatever your level is, wherever you're at. Everybody's, you know, thresholds are a little bit different. But no, I think there's value in that. I think a smart AD would certainly listen to you. You know, the turnover rate and the field goal percentage, if you go back and look at, you know, what Sweet 16 teams do, those are the number one indicators. You know, I do a clinic topic during the summer. You know, it's up to 41 now. 41 signs you suck. It's not your players. It's about all the mistakes that I've made as a coach. They're all 41. I've made all 41 of them. But, you know, defense wins championships. I love that. You know, it doesn't.
No way.
Every person who's done any analytical study, and like you said, light games, close games, competitive games, the first defensive stat you get to is about number 11, you know, so, it's just one of those myths. It's one of those lies we've been told and retold over the number of years, but I mean, you know, once again, much like your desire to move us all to one site, you're ahead of the game. I think a lot of smart ADs are doing that, but more importantly, I think a lot of the smarter coaches are turning towards that as well. They know that when you get into a close game, you have to be able to score. And, you know, I know we're frustrating. I get it. I hear it all the time from people. I hear it downstairs from JC. I know we're frustrating that we can lose games that people think we shouldn't lose. I still don't know which one that is. I mean, our worst loss this year is at Georgia, who's, by the way, like in the reveal. And we lost at the buzzer. So I know we can lose to people. But I also know we can't beat UConn and Baylor and those people unless we can score. You can't. If you go out there and try to play that way against those guys, you lose 100 out of 100 times. You play the way that we do. You emphasize offense. You recruit offensive players and try to teach them schemes and put them into positions defensively to be just good enough. And you got to have a great defensive coach. Todd Schaefer does our defense, and he does as good as he can do with a team of offensive players. You know, there's not one kid out there that we really recruited to be a defensive stopper, yet he finds a way. So, but that's what gives us a chance. Now, I'm sitting here looking at a wall across my game room. Every time we beat somebody that's ranked, we make a little plaque and put it up on the wall. Those don't happen if we go out and try to play like everybody else. It's money ball without the stats. Although the stats are there to support it, to me it's just visual. When you play a good team, you can't turn them over. This happened back in the day when we were trying to we lost to Gonzaga when we were at Xavier, when I was with Kevin. Couldn't turn Courtney Vandersloot over. Couldn't turn her over. I mean, she wasn't going to turn it over. And we'd been relying on turning people over all year. Well, we made an adjustment. The next year, we didn't go for that. We really worked on our offense. And the next year, we played them in the final, the Sweet 16. And we didn't turn her over, but we beat them. So I think there's, you know, some analytics to back it up. But I think it just takes somebody really paying attention and watching to know you've got to be able to score to beat the best teams.
UConn game. Let's take that for example. UConn is – they're so good, right? And part of why they're so good is not just because he has really good players. It's because of what he runs.
Yep.
Not a lot of teams run Chin and Princeton. They might have a piece of it here or there, our set, but – it is almost like a timing and a rhythm to what they do. And it's really hard to guard it if you don't understand it and can't teach it yourself on the offensive end.
Yep.
Why don't more teams look at trying to run the Chin and the Princeton offense so that you're better prepared when you come up against a team like UConn that you know is going to run it? Because I think Muffet didn't really start beating him until she started running it, and she had players to do it. But she changed what she was doing because I think she recognized that if you're going to knock him off, you got to be able to understand what he runs, and you got to be able to guard it. You have to score because he is going to score.
Got to be able to score. Well, if you go back and you watch all of his lead-up press conferences, all he talked about was being able to outscore us. He didn't think they could. And that's two reasons we played that game. You know, I already mentioned Coach Schaefer, Todd, my associate head coach. He's been running the Princeton since he was at Coffeyville, Kansas. He ran it at Christian Brothers. He ran it at Arkansas Tech. He ran it at Cincinnati. He ran it at Greenbrier High School. He knows the Princeton offense as well as anybody I know personally. So when we got ready to defend it, I mean, it was just like he was going back to day one. All we did was break down actions. We didn't break down sets. We didn't break down combinations. These are their five best actions. We need to stop four of them. If we can make them go to 6, 7, and 8 and score, then we're going to beat these guys. And that was the talk from day one. That was part of the reason we, you know, when we lost the game, there was a lot of people we could have probably reached out to, but that would make a lot of sense. Here's why I don't think people teach it. It's because it's hard to teach.
Yeah.
It is incredibly hard, and I think it takes time, and I think you've got to have incredible patience, and you've got to be an incredible teacher, and I'm just not sure – I know this. I know I wouldn't be comfortable doing it at my age because I don't have that experience. It would frighten me. It would scare me a little. And I think as a result, people do what we were talking about earlier. They're afraid to take a chance. Mm-hmm. They're afraid to take a chance because what if it doesn't work? I was young and dumb and didn't care. I think there's a lot of people that care too much to, hey, let's just run high-low or let's just run on ball or let's run this. It's so good. The kids love to play in it. It does take a special type of coach to teach it. And then you got to get the buy-in, the believe-in. And it's not a quick turn deal. Like, you couldn't come in and take over a program and teach the Princeton and win immediately. Mm-hmm. And in our win immediately dilemma that we're in right now, I think coaches are a little bit skeptical, a little afraid to try it. But we've got some elements of Princeton in what we do because of Todd and because it works, but you're right. They are incredibly difficult to guard, and people that say they win just because he's got the best players, they're not paying attention. Mm-mm. They don't understand how hard he gets them to work and how precise and how they go about it. It was good for us to see it because there are so many things that it takes to be a one-time national champion, much time an 11-time national champion.
Yeah, I mean, like Baylor, his kids will get in a stance and they're going to play some defense. I mean, there's no question about it. I've seen a lot of teams standing up while they're playing D, and that ain't going to cut it when you get to the NCAA tournament, because
nope.
If you're not creating those kind of habits now, it's going to be really tough to turn that switch on when you're going against high level teams.
Yeah.
Mike, I want to ask you about this. I learned, you know, you have included me several times in your Zoom calls this summer and,
yeah.
You know, during the pandemic about, all the unique and different people that you bring to your Zoom for education purposes, for growing, for stretching. And one thing that I hear all the time on broadcasts now that I never say is that we're playing chess.
Nope.
Okay.
We're not
playing chess, because if we were playing chess, we would have identical pieces, and we don't have identical pieces. So that's one thing that you've made me think about, that in the way I prepare and broadcast and what I say on the air. Well, talk about that group and how that formulated and why you did it. Because I know you're so well read. I wish I could read as much as you do.
Well, that's another thing that kind of fell in my lap. But it started with a local high school coach here. We just used to get on and talk about books. And we what's now we've learned is called a free roll, reached out to Annie Duke. And she said yes. And we invited a few people on to listen to her. And then we got Josh Medcalf on. Then we got David Niven on. And I mean, we had lots of authors. Lucas Jaden's been on. But just anybody that would – Kevin Eastman. Just anybody that would come on and share with us what led them to write their books and share. But back to your chess analogy, you know, that comes directly from Annie Duke in her book, Thinking in Bets and How to Decide, and a new one she has coming out that's going to have a section on coaches in it. I've been working with her on a couple of chapters in her book. And she brought up that, you know, coaches say that term all the time. Oh, what a great chess match. No, it's not. And that was like that aha, like, I cannot believe I've been thinking it for years, but I never could put it into words. And here is this, you know, ultimately successful poker player turned author who put it into words. We're not playing chess, man. It's poker. Man, my seven deuce can beat – I mean, our seven deuce offsuit can beat pocket aces if we play it right.
Right.
You know, if we play it right and we do all these other things and we put out misinformation, are we get confident? Or you instill confidence to go for it? You know, that's, you know, going all in. Playing UConn was going all in. I mean, you know, we're at South Carolina. We lose to South Carolina. We got a Georgia game coming up. And my kids say, let's play UConn. That's shoving your chips to the middle. That's, you know, so the Zoom is just, it was a bunch of coaching friends turned to business leaders, to anybody that we valued as somebody that we could trust. I mean, Annie Duke's a $50,000 a day speaker. And she got on a Zoom with 25. It started out 25. We ended up with a couple hundred there the last few times. But just, it's the only way. Reading, you know, is the only way you can get closer to greatness in today's generation, especially with COVID. It's the only way you can really expand your knowledge base. At my age, I'm not going to make a whole lot of new friends. It's the way to collapse time frames. I can learn more things faster through books and podcasts and talking to people. And just, it's knowledge. I wish I would have started earlier. I wish I wouldn't have, you know, waited till I was 35 to learn the value of reading. But it is definitely the number one thing I would say that's helped me find some rhythm to my life. You know, there's no such thing as balance. All these people that are out chasing a work profession balance, get out of here, because you're not going to be great at either one of them. You got to find a rhythm for that. So that group is fun. We're going to keep it going, Debbie. That's not something COVID's going to change. We're going to keep those things going this summer, and I can't wait to announce who the lineup that people we have lined up is crazy for this summer, just because of word of mouth.
I can't wait. I mean, I enjoyed each time I got to share all those Zooms with you. So I'm so appreciative of being included. Mike, you're always working on a project. You always have a project. Like for me, besides Her Hoop Stats, you're the next for me from an analytics standpoint. Like if I need something. I will ask you, what trend do you see here? What do you see there? What do you got? And I did mean to mention before, you know, the best field goal percentage in the history of our game is in 1985.
Okay.
Which, think about that.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, it's changed. And I've got some theories on why that is, but the athleticism has changed a little bit. I think the rules of the game a little bit, but no, I agree with you. I think that goes back to what we value and what we make important, like you were talking about earlier. But projects keep me going. I mean, that's what all the other stuff. I know it's kind of a routine. You know, it's February. You know, these things are hitting. I need to have something else in my life to keep me kind of. When I got a few extra minutes to spend, and this year's trying to figure out what the hell the net is. I am, you know, they're not sharing the algorithm with us, which I can't figure out why that is the case. But I'm trying to take all the data they are putting out and do like I did in ninth grade algebra. Work that problem backwards, baby. I could always get the answer. I couldn't show my work. What was that show your work F? But I got the answers right. But I'd get an F because I could never show the work and she thought I was copying. But I'm just trying to work that algorithm backwards to try to figure out how in the heck some of these teams are so high and others are so low. Mm-hmm. I just, at this point in time, it's got me stumped. But I'm not going to stop until I figure it out.
I agree with you. And for fear of getting in trouble, I have kept my opinions to myself about the reveal. However, I am interested in what your opinion was about the reveal, because I love the reveal, and I thought it was important when we had home sites and give people a jump on what could happen, and gives us another supposed to be a point of conversation.
Yep.
If you want to have a point of conversation, there should be, you know, some metrics of and platforms to be able to break it down a little bit so you can be transparent about why you decided what you decided, because there is an educational component for somebody like you. You know, you beat UConn, you beat Baylor, yet you're not in the 16.
Yeah, we've played seven other teams in it, too. We've got nine games against people in the reveal, and you've got some teams in the reveal who have only won, and it was a loss. You have others that were in the reveal that have losses way outside the reveal. So it's just another tool. Like, it's a conversation piece. It's something for me. I think it's great. I'm glad we do it.
Yeah,
like you said, this year probably less important than ever because it's not the home site and you're not, you know, it's all going to be about matchups when it comes Selection Monday anyway, regardless of what your seat is. But it is fun and it's fun to talk about. But, I did my predictions and I wasn't right I got a few right, but not very many of them as far as number for number. But it gives us another point to talk about. And again, I think all people that follow this, all we hope for is that the conversation is consistent all the way down. Okay, if UConn is number one, I'm all for it because we got the win over them. You know,
sure,
I get that. But metrically speaking, they don't have a win over anybody in the reveal except they got South Carolina. Okay, and then they won at Tennessee, so they've got two wins over the reveal. So do we. We're not in it. Mm-hmm. Well, they've got one loss outside of the reveal. Okay, we don't. Everybody we've lost to is in the reveal. So how are we that different? I don't know. I mean, I know there's some eye tests to it. I know there's some. Okay, so let's just make sure we're applying the same criteria all the way down to break every tie. That's all you can hope for. I know it's next to impossible. I sat on those mock committee deals, and I get it. I think it goes back to stuff I read in the book all the time. The more people you bring in the room, the more opinions you're going to get, the more variables you're going to consider. Man, I wish we just had one person that we really trusted and said, here it is. And I'm going to be consistent and I'm going to stand up and say, this is why I think what I think. And I may be wrong and I may be right, but I'm standing behind this. We talk about it in voting. I just got through turning in my WBCA ballot right before our call. I've got a formula. I don't want my friends to see me in the halls at the convention and go, hey, man, why'd you drop us three spots after we lost it? Here's why. Because I've got an answer for you.
Yeah,
you lost to an unranked team on the road. You dropped three spots at least.
I have an answer, you know, too.
Maybe more, maybe less, depending on what happens around you. But I'm going to have an answer for you. This goes back, Debbie, to something we talked about earlier. One of my signs that you suck as a coach is that you, when I was a high school coach, I used to have a rule. I'm not going to talk to you as a parent about playing time or shots. Well, that's the stupidest thing I could have ever done. That's the only thing they care about is playing times and who shoots it. And if I don't have an answer for that, then I suck. Mm-hmm. So I've got an answer. If you want to know why you're not playing for us, come in. I'm gonna tell you exactly. Now be ready for the meeting. Come prepared, because I'm gonna tell you why. So I don't know. I guess that's where I get with all this, with the selection and stuff. I just hope we all get it right, because these kids deserve it. The only reason I was resistant to the net is because we were making a change in the most tumultuous year of all of our lives. And now we've just introduced another variable that nobody, except for whoever wrote the algorithm for them, knows what the answer is. So I'm hopeful they'll share it with us in time. And if not, we'll crack the code and we'll share it for free on the internet.
Well, the only thing we know is they did research different and evaluated what the men's net was. And somehow they made some change, but we're not really sure what change it was. I'm just happy about two things moving forward, and we are taking baby steps. There is some analytics involved in the offensive and defensive efficiency, so that should help some teams and help the committee.
I agree.
We're relying on a little bit of an eye test. And the second thing is, we finally have an S curve. I mean, our game and our coaches deserve the S curve, not something based on geography. And those are the two things that I'm pleased about.
Well, since we're talking, let's talk about this. When you get to the efficiency part, here's where I stumbled just a little bit. And there may be a way to mathematically account for it. You have to have the adjusted for schedule piece on there. Adjusted for schedule. Mm-hmm. Okay. Men have it. There's a great block. The men share what their algorithm is. It's out there. You can find it. And there's a little blip that says efficiencies adjusted for schedule. I'm afraid we don't have the adjusted for schedule part, because here's my red team of this, Debbie. You know what? It's going to be hard to be efficient when you play nine teams that were in the reveal. My efficiency is not going to be near as good as somebody whose schedule is lesser. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be some teams that didn't play anybody in the reveal. There's a team currently in the RP, in the net, in the top 30, that has not played a game versus anybody in the top 50. They don't have a win over anybody in the top 100, but they're in the top 25 of the net. They have great efficiencies because they're winning games by an exorbitant amount of points. Here's the other part that I'm a little skittish about. I am now finding myself not subbing as much late in games.
You feel like you got to blow somebody out?
Not only that, but you've got to do it efficiently. I can't put my third team backup who needs to play in, because if we score, if we give up six possessions in a row to finish the game, my efficiency plummets. Yeah. Plummets. So now, are we really doing good for the game if I'm not willing to play my freshman? And then you strip away four games that this year would have been bye games where I could have played those kids. Those kids haven't got any experience this year, because I'm worried about every single possession. And again, I'm not even sure I'm right. All I'm doing is looking, going, how is this one team here above us in the net, the way they've gotten there, other than efficiency? So I better not sub. You know what else we did? For the first time in my coaching career, the other day, the shot clock was off. We tried to score. And I felt terrible. I felt terrible. Because I used to get mad at people that would run a play with the shot clock off and say, well, you know what? That goes down as an empty possession for us from now on. And if we do that in 25 games, that's 25 empty possessions. And if you're not telling me that that could move us a couple of spots in the net, man, I don't know. I can make a case.
Wow, so that's very interesting.
And as long as you add adjusted for schedule, then we're going to be okay. If you don't have that piece in there, which, again, I'm just speculating. Otherwise, I just can't figure out where how Coach Blair's team at Texas A&M is not a little bit higher in the net playing the schedule with the wins they've played. I know that the committee saw that and moved them to a two line. I've been voting them number one in the country for the last 2 weeks. I am one of the two coaches that are voting for Texas A&M number one. And I feel 100% confident in doing it because we have played South Carolina. We have played Baylor. We have played UConn. We played A&M twice. We played. I feel okay with that. We played Maryland. I feel okay telling everybody I'm one of the two people voting for Texas A&M number one. But, you know, that's what I want. I want open ballots. I want open votes on who voted for so-and-so for player of the year. Have a reason. Stand up behind it. And not everybody's going to love you. That's fine. But at least be liked for what you believe in.
I agree with you. I mean, you might not like my opinion or you might not agree with it, but at least you'll know why I did what I did. And I don't think we have enough of that transparency. I agree.
Don't talk about stuff you don't know about.
When you put it out there, Mike, people do come after you. I mean, I put it out there on social media. I get all kinds of people coming at you about from all different angles. And, you know, you can't just respond to all of that on social media. You have to, you know, well, look, you know, we don't have enough platforms in our game. That, unfortunately, we don't have enough places that we can discuss or have conversation. We don't have enough places to have the whole conversation that you just had about the net. It's really interesting. It's very interesting. So
death of basketball camps has hurt us a lot. Those days of coaches going and spending 5 days shacked up in a dorm room making $125 a week, busting your butt from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, and then having the fellowship. Those days are gone because of insurance and all the other things going on, all the other distractions. And then just the small groups that sit in the bars and the lobbies at the Final Fours, we miss those. Those days are gone. Everybody's got their – we've got to get back to where we get more coaches together, more opinion drivers. Debbie, I remember the first time I met you, we were head-to-head in a damn trivia contest at the Final Four, and I pulled Jenny Doyle out and beat – I think we beat you and Beth Owens and Patrick – what was Patrick's name that –
Patrick Auerbach.
Oh, God. Unbelievable trivia guy.
That was our full court pressure game when we would run the full court pressure at the Nike Christmas party. We did that every year. That was so much fun.
I
created a game off of that, Mike. It's called full court pressure.
I pulled Jenny Doyle out of my butt for – she was standing right in front of us when I got asked the question. And she – God, I miss Jenny so much.
It was consecutive free throws. I think the 16. Number was 61.
Yeah, right.
May she rest in peace.
That's right. I know. That's why I was just saying. I have that picture on my phone, and it pops up every now and then. But that's where we met. We met in a bar talking basketball.
Yes.
And it flowed over to the lobby. And then it flowed over to when, you know, you were doing some of our games, and I was an assistant coach, and you were nice to me. These relationships we're missing. There's too many young coaches that are worried too much about their social media profile and not their real profile. And we were talking about Villa 7 a minute ago, and I know you were talking about Top Connect coming out. We need more things like that for young coaches to be in front of ADs and future ADs and people like you that share the game and love the game and get to know people. And again, listen, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've lost more friends since becoming a head coach than I've gained. It happens. When you go from being an assistant coach to head coach, your circle really, really shrinks. But there are so many people that we owe it to in this game to keep it growing. And I just hope we can get a way to do that after this COVID's over.
Mike, the last thing I want to ask you is, you know, as moms, we get asked this question all the time about balance. And I love the way you phrased the rhythm of your life. With Bowen in your life and what that little guy, he is all over social media. He is the cutest thing. I can't wait till COVID is over so I can get my hands on him.
I know. He's even better in person. Because when you feel those rolls, just your fingers just sink into him.
I'm a 100% boy mom. I mean, I admit it. With my three guys, I mean, I just love that baby boy. I just want to put my hands on him and hold him, squeeze him, and hug him.
As soon as it's over, we're going to find a way. And depending on how late it's over, he's going to have a sibling right there beside him. We got another one due in August. So,
wow, that's awesome.
I know. How about that? But no, it's not balance. It's rhythm. You know, you got this. And I'm a roller coaster guy. Listen, I get it. I don't want to go to Six Flags and ride the merry-go-round or Kings Island. I want to ride the – but that – having people in your life like that is what makes all the hard times and the two-point losses and the buzzer beaters. You know, that little guy doesn't know the difference, man. He does not know the difference when I get home, whether or not Jordan Nixon hits another buzzer beater against us or we beat UConn or Baylor. He doesn't know. He just knows I'm home. And you know, I'm sitting here in his playroom right now and I'm looking at all the blocks and flashcards and ping pong balls that we've been shooting. I don't know if you saw the one. We've been working on left hand and right hand, Debbie, already. We're getting those up. We don't know which one he's gonna be, but you do. Okay. You've got to find rhythm and you got to find people that are willing to go through it with you. It's not going to be balanced if you're going to be great at anything. And people spend so much time trying to find this balance that they end up wasting time. Man, just find that rhythm and find people that can get into it with you. You don't have to be a great dancer to enjoy dancing. Just find somebody that's got the same rhythm you got. That's what you got to find with this too. Yeah. That understand that, that get it, that treats you the same win or lose. You know, that's the type of players we recruit. I tell kids in our recruiting process, if when you step on the first step of that bus after every game, I'm not going to treat you any differently, whether we won the game or lost the game, and you better not act different to me. If I put my five out, you better dab me up. If you blow by me because we lost, then we made a mistake. We've got to treat each other the same way, win or lose, coaches the same way. Have that competitive respect for each other to keep this game growing, or we're in danger. I mean, there's so many other things out there that people can put their attention toward and spend their money on. I just hope we keep having a product like you talked about earlier that's enjoyable. And I think we see it. I think the NBA guys coming around, I think the general public has now started to follow in there. You're always going to have your trolls out there. I get a kick out of those people that want to challenge Kelsey Plum to a three-point shootout. Bring that on, buddy. I got all kinds of money to put down on number 10 right here. I don't know how much you got, but I know how much I got, and I'm willing to bet it all. So I just think we ought to all stick together, and especially in our game. We sometimes get fractured even within our game. We got to all stick together. There's not enough of us to fight off all these idiots. If we don't stick together. So I try to be behind every single person that's doing it for the good of our game and hope someday that we can pass it on to other people.
Mike, I can't wait till we can spend more time again talking on the podcast. You're awesome. I love what you do. You know I'm a big fan of your style. I think it's so infectious and it's so great for young people to watch what you're doing and seeing how important shooting and scoring is in our game. So thank you for everything.
Absolutely.
You
do. Thanks for having me, Brian. Appreciate it, man. Good to see you too. And when this COVID's over, we're going to do one of those Zoom sessions live and in person up here in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And we'll have both of you. We'll find a way to get you up here from South Mississippi down there. Okay?
We don't want to tell everybody
where you're at. Yes, sir.
All right. You got it.
All right, Mike. Thank you so much.
See y'all.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Enjoyed it.
As always, you can send in your questions to Debbie at the email address askantonelli@gmail.com or by using the hashtag AskAntonelli on Twitter. You can listen to our podcast on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and TuneIn. You can find all of those by visiting our Linktree link in our bio on Twitter and Instagram at MBN with DA, or in the description of this podcast episode below.